no amount of Bitcoin can give me the experiences I've had with other Bitcoiners. There's no price on that. It's completely invaluable. And it comes back to that thing of what you own ends up owning you. It's Bitcoin as well. It's a very, very powerful tool for freedom. But if you're holding on to that Bitcoin and you're not living your life, then what is your life?
Welcome to Life with Bitcoin, where we delve into the human side of Bitcoin by focusing on Bitcoiners' personal transformations and life stories. I'm your host, Vivian. Thanks for tuning in. If you like and want to support our mission on shining light on the human side of Bitcoin, remember to subscribe to this channel, leave a comment, or send a few sats from link in the description. Today, our guest is Roger 9000. We met the first time we were interacting, I guess, was through Valerie. Was Valerie B. Love's Creator Summit. We're in that massive group of Bitcoin creators and doing things together. We were not on the same panel, and we didn't actually interact. And then a week after that, we were both on Why We're Bullish with BTC Sessions. And unfortunately, Roger's internet network was not working. And I remember seeing a comment from the live stream section from Yellow saying that Roger's face, when he was trying to figure out the technical issue, Roger looks like me going to the fridge at 3 a.m. in the morning looking for snacks I don't have. So it was live stream, so I was really, really trying to keep a straight face this entire time while thinking about this. And it was a very accurate description of what the look of you at the time. And I knew you were going to Berlin, but I didn't want to say anything, didn't want to spoil the surprise. And it was really great to get to spend some time with you and experience the city, experience the vibe with a bunch of other amazing Bitcoiners. And now we're here. Roger performed during the Bitcoin meetup in Berlin, and I was blown away because, Roger, I know you before your performance, right? And then I know you as this very smiley and calm and gentle and kind and sweet and peaceful person. But then you're on stage and then you're a completely different state of mind. Like, there's so much passion and very rebellious, and you have that rock star vibe and even aggressive, even, because the songs are electric and rock and roll, like that, very loud, and there's a lot of, you know, punchy messages in there, and you're just blooming on stage. So the construct was very interesting to see, for sure. And thank you for joining the show today. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of fun, and welcome.
Thank you, Vivian. It's been quite a ride to meet you in a place like Berlin. It was an exceptional experience. I wasn't expecting that, and a few people said maybe you're not ready, maybe I wasn't ready, but I think we all definitely learned a bit more about ourselves, and that's what it's all about. I'm looking forward to this. Very much looking forward. Your content has been blowing me away. So,
how was your upbringing like growing up? What was it like to grow up as Roger 9000?
I'm from Australia originally, Sydney, Australia.
How in that journey did you discover music?
Well, I discovered it pretty early, 7, 8, 9. That sort of age. I remember. I think we were 9. I've got a twin brother, by the way. We're identical.
So, if your brother comes on my show today, I wouldn't have noticed.
I think there are different visible differences. He's an actor, so we've done some shows together, and we've done some TV together, and If the makeup artist puts us face to face, can adjust certain things about our hair and makeup and stuff, and we can actually look pretty identical even today. Yeah. So music was just innate for me. It was just, my mum loved music. My dad was a musician, although he comes from an Eastern background. So So music was happened really early, but I never really took it seriously because I wasn't, I don't know, I wasn't a very calm person growing up because I didn't understand what I was doing with my time or who I was or what I was, you know, teachers couldn't somehow calm me down. I was just running around. I never felt relaxed. I never felt calm or at peace. So I was always just trying to fit in. I was always just trying to, you know, I guess impress other people because I didn't think I was ever good enough. And that was, yeah. So then I realized, but like later on when I got to uni, that actually music could be more about myself. And that was a big difference between the early kind of music and the sort of expression kind of music that came after that.
What was it like to have an identical twin? Because mm-hmm. I obviously don't have one. And right. The way I imagine it, to have identical twin where you have a whole person that share the exact same set of genes and you look the same. And how was it like to grow up with such a mirror in a way, just right in front of you, and you have to spend time, so much time with them, and then to grow up and progress in life and evolve into different adults, into your own life and become your own person. And I feel like it's even harder because in a way you can, by default, if we don't have identical twins, biological identical twins, then we're already kind of unique enough in this world by our genetic orders, by our upbringings, because nobody is the same enough. But you literally have a doppelganger right in front of you, growing up with you. And I can imagine that for me, at least, that would be even more pressure to become myself in a way and to venture into something that's completely more radical so that I prove that I'm different, where I can stretch myself in different ways than my twins. Was that a similar thing for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't actually realize what was going on because he was so close and because he is, you know, in many ways still my best friend, and we've experienced literally everything together. You know, it's such a beautiful thing to have somebody who you can always know understands you in some way. It's just, it's an incredible thing. But having said that, you also have somebody who, you know, exposes all the things that you don't want to realize about yourself and holds this mirror up to you and shows you, you know, all your inefficiencies and all your beliefs and all those things that make you feel like I'm not good enough. And he was born first, so he has this kind of, if you like, older sibling kind of vibe about him. And so I was always on the back foot. I was always slower. I was always like last to sort of get there. I was always doing stuff in his shadow. And there were pros and cons to that. There really were pros and cons. And it took me a long time to realize that actually, wow, man, I got to get away. I really got to get away and try to be myself. Exactly like you said, I really had to exit his vicinity altogether. So, yeah, he was living in Australia. So I literally just had to move. I moved to London, and it was the greatest thing I ever did. I mean... And it was the best thing for our relationship as well.
And back to the question of, have you always loved yourself or is it a self-made journey? It almost is like you have to have a self first to love that. And mm-hmm. if you don't know who you are and don't know what are you doing in this world? How are you using your time for? Then you can say that you love yourself, but you don't know what is the thing that you're loving. You don't have a self to love. Mm-hmm. So I guess in this way, it goes to show that when we want to exercise self-love, when we want to learn to love ourselves and then to love others, we're simultaneously, we need to first understand who ourselves are, and understand what are our preferences and our place in this world. I guess that this is an ever-evolving journey, right? Because you can never truly figure out. But I guess the awareness of it and to go on the pursuit of finding who myself is the beginning of self-love, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, you've really asked an incredible question, and you've explained it and brought it out perfectly, Vivian. That's really, really cool. And I think you could only do that because of your understanding of what expression is, and you're a musician and you're discovering yourself in this same kind of way. And I think it kind of, you know, there's a reason. Is it Whitney Houston wrote that song, The Greatest Love of All? And I know it's so cheesy, and it's just like, oh man, but like it's no coincidence that a musician has come out with music like that, because there's something, maybe, I don't know, I guess because we all have voices and we all hear music in language, we all hear music in nature, and this is music all around us. And maybe music is one of those art forms, and it is just one of those art forms, but it is maybe one of the first art forms that we kind of come to innately. And so when we come to expressing, when we come to expressing ourselves, it's really easy to do it in something we recognize as well as music. And so maybe, I don't know, maybe I was always looking to love myself through music, because it was always, you know, I just remember, I just love singing. I just love the feeling of singing. It was like I was, you could say, rubbing myself, you know, I was massaging myself, right? And I don't know if you get that feeling when you sing, but singing is literally it's a cathartic, massaging, exhilarating. I mean, singing is literally, anyway, it's ironic actually, because I've never been able to speak with confidence until I came to Bitcoin.
You said finding Bitcoin is a form of self-love. How come? For someone who's not yet a Bitcoiner, we're saying all these things that Bitcoin means to our lives. And for people who are not yet into Bitcoin or know very little about Bitcoin, this sounds too good to be true. How does Bitcoin help manifest self-love for you in general?
I mean, it really comes back to this concept of Bitcoin being a mirror, because the mirror is your, firstly, it doesn't start out as a mirror of you. It starts out as a mirror of society. So you look at Bitcoin and it just literally gets you to question, firstly, what is money, right? And then, you know, what's this thing called information and education and health? And obviously, as Bitcoin, as we know, this rabbit hole just doesn't end. It's this constant learning, this constant discovery of this, you could say, this world of transparency, really, because what Bitcoin does, it gets you to really hunt for a sense of the truth in all of those questions. And ultimately, it kind of leads you back to yourself after you've looked at society and started to gain an idea of what your ideas of society are. You then are starting to ask questions about yourself. And this is where the self becomes so much more, you start to reflect on yourself so much more. And really now you start, and I think it begins with a physical sense of the self, and so that's where your health really becomes priority, a priority. For a lot of Bitcoiners, health is one of their biggest priorities. And so you start to question, well, am I eating right? Am I sleeping right? Am I exercising right? And then you might, you know, everyone's journey is different, but you'll think about education. You'll think about if you've got a family, if you're in a relationship, all of these things come up. But essentially what you're doing is you're asking yourself, how am I, I think this really is the biggest question now, how am I spending my time and how am I utilizing my time the best for me? And that's when you start saying, well, who am I? What really turns me on? What really excites me? What am I really passionate about? And this is that self-purification system or process that we all seem to enter into as Bitcoiners. I think, you know, whether you start to become a podcaster or a musician or a chocolate maker, whatever you decide becomes a passion for you, because passion is just attracted to something, right? It's just being aligned with something. And Bitcoin gives us the time, the energy, the low time preference, the delayed gratification, all those things play into it. And all of a sudden, you're actually purifying yourself through the process of doing what you truly believe is right for you. And when you do what's right for you, you find out that it's actually right for the people around you as well, because you start to treat them better. You start to do things that are better for them as well, you know, and it's just, yeah, cyclical. And that's where the altruistic love eventually comes from, that self-love.
When we start to think about, start to adapt Bitcoin as a mirror of our world, and then we progress, and then we start to think about our own time, how are we spending our own time? And if you think about it, our time is our life. Our time is our life, and our time is ourself. What we decide to do with our time contribute to the person we will become tomorrow. And it's all kind of determined in a way, because at any given point, we can say that the past me, whatever the decision the past me made, led to one thing, led to another, and then I'm here today. And whatever decision I make today will have major impact on my future self. And I was tweeting this the other day and saying, you know, the self, the us today would be the past self for our future. So act accordingly, because your future, our future is in our hands right now, and you have capability and you have a say in it. And I think one thing about Bitcoin that's so powerful is that it make you, once you realize the relationship of time and energy and money, you start to, you have to make a mental note if you want to embrace Bitcoin on the front of, do you think you're worthy? Do you think your time is worthy? Do you think your life is worthy? And on the other hand, it's also about responsibility, because now for the very first time in a fiat society, we are actually in charge of our lives in this framework, as we should. But as modern, even postmodern individuals, we are so used to getting told what to do. We're getting pushed and have external forces just squished us into different directions without us even like realizing, and we're just reacting all the time. And to actually take, claim back that agency and take that responsibility and say, hey, I want my life to be this way because I'm this person, it requires tremendous strength, it requires tremendous courage, and a very deep understanding of who you are, because otherwise that want and need and the self-actualization aspect come from a deep understanding of who you are. So understanding who you are is actually not only the beginning of self-love, but also to realize your mission in this world. And there's a bigger truth to it, and it all starts seeking within. And then what Bitcoin also does is once you realize that there's the absurdity in our world, and what we see, what we're told are true and not necessarily true, we can make the shift of pleasing others to pleasing ourselves, from seeking validation from external environment to transition to having an internal scale. This is my standard because I'm on the Bitcoin standard. And in Bitcoin standard, we value low time preference. We value time, love, and connection. We value freedom. And if we have those internal scales to evaluate ourselves in, we can basically have better recognition of noise and signal to land on internal peace. And the last thing is that it seems to help us transform anger into productivity. Because if you recognize the world is kind of fucked up in many, many sense, and then you don't have a tool to change it, then you can get into nihilism. And you can just sit in the water and then get into nihilism day in, day out, and feels like there's no point. But Bitcoin is the technology, the piece of information, or whatever we call it, that actually allow us to transform that anger, the angry energy, into something that's productive and beautiful and love and peace and all these great things that we as humans all crave for ourselves and for our world. And that's really, really beautiful, and is really hard to do. And you struck me as someone, and you talk about this process of, you talk about this purification process for individuals a lot through Bitcoin or just in general. And I want to ask you this. What do you think makes something or someone pure?
Oh, that's a great question. There is this concept, and I guess it comes from religious, Western religion particularly, that it is possible to be 100% pure, or at least, you know, 100% good or whatever. And I think that that's a misconception in a way. So much work that's been done by psychologists and philosophers. I always come back to Jung and Joseph Campbell and Alan Watts, just because they spoke about how these concepts of purity have been kind of thought of as absolute things, and really the purity is in understanding that you're not completely pure. Again, it's like the answer is there is no answer, right? There's so many of these philosophical ideas, but it's a very difficult concept because people kind of think, well, no, surely I can be completely pure. I can be completely good because God is all good, you know? And I think it's really important to understand that as human beings, we live in a dualistic world, right? We live in a world of masculine, feminine, right and wrong, and life and death. And there's no such thing as completely good. It's there's always a balance there. There's always a darkness to the light. There's always a lightness to the dark. And I think that's what's so beautiful about Bitcoin, because it enables us to accept the darkness within ourselves. It enables us, and it begins with that greed thing. It begins with the selfishness thing that so much of our Western civilization has told us, no, selfishness is bad and greed is bad. And then along comes this Bitcoin thing, and it's the beautiful Trojan horse, because it literally just says, well, guess what? You know, this time it's actually, you're not going to be able to resist this thing called Bitcoin, because whether you come to it for the money or you come to it for the revolution, you realize that it accepts you completely. And it takes a while, I think, and this is why money is the most attractive thing in Bitcoin, and why people come for the money, but they actually stay for the revolution, because they realize that actually this purification system that starts to occur through Bitcoin is actually trying to get to the bottom of what it is that is really pure in you. And we are all pure, but what it is accepting our dark side. that's the purity.
Exactly.
Of who you are is actually accepting that, oh, wow, I do have a sense of greed. I do have a sense of selfishness, and embracing that, because that's what makes you human. You wouldn't be human if you didn't have these emotions. And Bitcoin enables that acceptance. Naomi Hayes, she was the first one I heard talking about this, and she just blew me away. I literally cried when I heard her talking about it. She put it in such a way that she spoke about how Bitcoin is the black. Bitcoin is not orange. Bitcoin is black, because Bitcoin is this darkness that basically enables you to see yourself truly and clearly. And in that process, you see all the aspects of yourself. And this is why it's so difficult for some people. They see Bitcoin, they see the darkness of themselves, and they say, whoa, hang on. I'm not like that. And they reject it. And it can be really difficult for people to see Bitcoin because of all of that stuff that is that Bitcoin is exposing in that way. So, yeah, purity is it's a paradoxical word. But the irony of it is that you come to self-purification through accepting all those little nitty-gritty, crazy little, you know, warts and all thing. Alan Watts calls it the element of irreducible rascality.
Can you share an experience where you felt a profound sense of purity?
The irony of losing Bitcoin, when I lost my Bitcoin, I lost about 80% of all my Bitcoin, which was an incredibly painful thing, but it was through my own fault. It was my own stupidity. But that was such a purifying process, because up until that point, I was holding onto my Bitcoin. I was looking at it, fuck this freaking figure on the screen, like, you know, and I was looking at him and I was thinking, yeah, one day, you know, that's going to be something, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And it was such a fallacy, right? It was such a living in the future rather than living now, you know? And so the purification process that occurred right there was so sublime, because all of a sudden I let it go, man. I really let it go. And the Bitcoin I have now, I spend it so easily, because I know that I'm doing it for me, and I'm doing it for what I love, and I'm doing it for hanging out with Bitcoiners, and I'm doing it for Bitcoin. I'm spending Bitcoin for Bitcoin and for the whole community and for the whole ethos of what it is to be a Bitcoiner. And so that was the most profound experience of being a Bitcoiner I've had, and that was very purifying and very satisfying. It was amazing.
Wow, I'm so, the fact that you're saying this, it means you're already in another like state where you're not attached to it. And you know, Buddha says the source of all pain is attachment, something like that.
Exactly.
Absolutely right. Because if you, when the 1 second you're holding on to it, you are focusing on the thing itself. You're not seeing the bigger picture. And then when you are fixating on the thing itself, then you're limiting yourself and you're thinking small, and you're you could be in another dimension, a bigger dimension, but you're trapped. You're trapping yourself into this and think this is all. And I absolutely see this. And Bitcoiners, we huddle and then we're proud of it, but literally like what you said, and we hope for the better future and it's all good and well, and then we success like crazy. But what about now? Like, what about living our lives? And having $5,000 in your 20s is completely different than having $5,000 in your 40s. And sometimes I look at my parents and they've worked hard their whole life and they've accumulated to the point that they're okay. Now they're retired, they're relaxed, and they're like, oh, okay, what do I put in? Where do I put my money in now? Like, the real estate is no go, and they've wasted all these years. And I feel really bad for them, but this is their choice. But I'm seeing so many Bitcoiners making the same mistake, and that makes my heart ache. Go have that wedding, have a wedding. Go on that vacation. Your kids only grow up once. And and we were talking about this in Berlin, and we're talking about how, even though at the end of the day, this all go away, the life with Bitcoin itself, the journey we go through as Bitcoiners, the people we meet in this incredible journey, it's worth it enough. Like, it's worth it enough. And regardless of having Bitcoin or not at all. Like, that's literally my stand. Of course, we would want to have some Bitcoin like tucked away, but the life itself, living with Bitcoin, it's enough.
No amount of Bitcoin can give me the experiences I've had with other Bitcoiners. There's no price on that. It's completely invaluable. And it comes back to that thing of what you own ends up owning you. It's Bitcoin as well. It's, you can't divorce yourself from the owner. Yeah, I know Bitcoin is you, and you know, it's a very, very powerful tool for freedom. But if you're holding on to that Bitcoin and you're not living your life, then what is your life? You know, it's and that's what's so important. And this is why we can only bring a horse to water. We can't make it drink. And I think shouting Bitcoin from the top of the roof is all well and good. And, you know, there will always be people doing that, I think. But, I mean, I made a pretty strong decision after I lost that Bitcoin. I was like, wow, man, I'm going to do exactly what I love, and that is music. And if I can bring Bitcoin into my music, that's great. And I actually have done nothing but bring Bitcoin into my music, and it's been the most incredible journey. But it has been a journey that is absolutely priceless. And I couldn't have done it before, but I would today. I would give up all my Bitcoin just to continue this journey. And that's what I do. That's like, you know, I spend all my Bitcoin to just do what I love doing, and it's the best thing in the world. It's just the best, yeah.
I really admire that, because I do see it, and I see the vibe that you carry, and you really show that. And we talk about this purification process for individual, but I think you're a rather pure person, from what I can see. And if about purity, you're right, it's completely paradoxical. And if you think about it, if there's no night, there's no day. If there's no hate, there's no love, because everything, you cannot, it's not singular. You have, there's a scale, there's a spectrum, and everybody get to decide where they sit on the spectrum, or sometimes you don't get to decide, but you actually have the power to decide on many of the things, and it's your choice, and you can claim that choice if you choose to. For you, what happens when, basically, I think about this a lot. Like, I think about this a lot. What makes someone or something pure? And one of the argument here I have is to understand the good side and the dark side in equal depth, and to choose the harder path, which is to be good. In the Bitcoin context, we have fiat and then we have Bitcoin. We have rent seeking mentality, and then we have proof of work, low time preference. You don't get to, you're building something towards the future. And the rent-seeking mentality, it's somewhat like, it's easier to adapt because it's everybody else is doing it. And but in a way you're selling your soul to achieve something that other people care about, and then you think, oh, should I care about it too just because other people care about that? And it's never ending. You don't develop something that belongs to you. So in this case, Bitcoin is the harder path to claim that responsibility and to say, that's enough. I want something for me, who I am, that curiosity and that itch to be your own person. And then the focus of it, you really have to give up on the easier paths and then focus on the harder paths no matter what. And that dedication, that focus and consistency feels pure to me. And for you, what happens when an individual becomes pure?
Yeah, that you've got some great questions, Vivian. I had a feeling you would. I had a feeling this would be really cool. I think we live with these crises in the world. Like we live with a value crisis, and we live with an identity crisis. And I think the realization that these two massive crises are what effectively squashes or somehow oppresses the ability to love yourself. It oppresses the ability to find yourself. And this is all really born out of, it gets kind of quite religious and quite philosophical in a way, but you could pick a point, and I like to pick the point of the Enlightenment, because that was a time, ironically, when church and state were separated, and the church really was this focal or this concentration, this place where people could come and really focus and have a sense of self through God somehow. So through faith, they could somehow place their understanding in something bigger, and I think that's what gave people a sense of faith. And I think that was kind of destroyed. Sorry, my voice. That was kind of destroyed when the scientific revolution happened, and that kind of, I think, really was a shelling point for the crises that was about to occur, because we started to place all of our belief and all of our understanding in science. We just started to forget about faith altogether. We started to forget about looking inside, and it was all about justifying everything we do through a measurement system, through statistics, through empirical evaluation, and basically we started to forget about ourselves. So in doing that, we're essentially coming to a value crisis, because because instead of valuing things like our health and our sense of identity, valuing our sense of relationships, because there's no way of valuing those, we start to value things like money. We start to value things like possessions. And we start to value things accreditation and qualification, all of these things that it's not that they're not important. It's just that they're completely unbalanced now, in that we value everything in those ways and we don't value the human things, like courage, like bravery, like connection, like intuition, right? I mean, and thank God for women in a way, because I feel like the whole world has become so masculinated, or emasculated. Is that the word? Like
patriarchy.
Like, yeah, this patriarchy has become so dominant. Female energy has really been suppressed a lot. It's freaking crazy. And so that balance needs to come back. And the balance of the individual needs to come back. The crisis of, the value system itself is all broken, because we've started to value things in numbers and money, and that system is actually already broken. We know that as Bitcoiners. But when you try to use a broken system to value yourself, I mean, that's just, it's just a complete waste of time. I mean,
we're doomed. Yeah.
We're doomed, right? Even if the monetary system was working, which I guess you could say while it was on a gold standard, there was some, you know, hardness of that money. And so we were able to value things and allocate capital properly and have a sense of value through a measurement system. So that worked for quite a while. But now that the money is completely not backed by anything and it's just printed out of thin air, we don't really have a sense of what anything's worth. And we can see this all around us. Like, the way we don't have this way of valuing things. Like, there's no price discovery. There's no capital allocation anymore. It's just, it's really, like you say, your parents don't know where to put their money. It's just, we don't know where to put our money anymore. And so, yeah, thank God for Bitcoin. It's given us this place to reassign value again. But even more than that, because once we go from the actual hard ability to value things, then we can actually start to, I think, we start to then look at ourselves more in depth. And then we start to really work out, why do I have this identity crisis? And it's because we've been taught to value stupid things. It's just the system we've grown up in. We just value things that aren't particularly human, and they don't really make us happy, and they don't really make us aware of who we are. It's all pretty fucked up. I mean, wonder how people continue in their lives. I mean, at least we have Bitcoin. At least, you know, I don't think it saves us completely, but it does save us quite a lot. And I do feel like it's the road to savior. But for people that don't even have Bitcoin, they must be completely lost. Yeah.
Personally, I think even back then, there were a lot of people who were lost too, because that was the norm too. That was, I bet there was a group of people who were only doing these things because other people were having families. They were only doing these things because that's what they are accustomed to, and they didn't know they had other options, even with the, you know, with a sort of, I guess, stable society and a stable financial system. And I guess to this point, we can never truly uncover how many people were doing this out of their own values and are having a fulfilled life, or how many people felt trapped in that setting just because everybody else were doing the same thing. But at least today we can have that awareness of what is my truth, what is my preference, and to think about life in a way that it doesn't have to be, I have my own agency, and I actually do have a choice to go after the things I want, and not, and I have the proper tools for it. And that's extremely liberating. and exciting, and it brings so much. And yesterday I was tweeting about this, like try to become that vessel of possibility. And we see a lot of, at least for me, like in my personal life, I see some limiting mentalities around me. Like if they want to do first things first, sometimes, oftentimes they don't know what they want. And if you don't know what they want, then it's like, you know, just hard to begin with. And sometimes if you want to do something and then people get discouraged, people get triggered, like what if this and what if that, and this is difficult, and you know, I don't know how it's gonna work out, just go freaking do it. Like you never know. And oftentimes you're gonna think that it's the imagination, you're imagine the fear, and you are triggered by your imaginary fear, and it's not a real thing, it's all in your head. And once you get rid of that, it's, you know, it's, you're fine. And I wish more people realize that. And you're absolutely right that Bitcoin doesn't save us completely. And I hate to see when people think it does. And it's very naive to think that one thing or one person can solve all of your life's problems, and not even Bitcoin. And especially not Bitcoin, because otherwise you're going to put your whole life's saving into it and then thinking it's going to save you in the future. And what if you lose it one day and you are you, and then you overcome this, and you approach this as a life lesson for the better. But there are going to be people that approach this life lesson for the worse. Can you imagine if someone spent decades stacking sats only to lose it? We're going to see people commit suicide. We see people commit suicide losing their life saving on the stock market, on gambling, on whatever. We're going to see that in Bitcoin or two. And that's 100%. I think we're going to see that. And I hope that if those people who have that tendency, I hope you see this conversation, and so we can save your life. And I like to think that. So we're like spreading good karma here, Roger. And
wow.
Something you also talk about is manifestation. I'm a big fan of manifestation. Like I try to do it as well. So for those of whom who are not familiar with the concept, what is manifestation for you, and how do you do it, and why it works, you think?
I mean, for me, it's quite a, it's a very natural flowing thing. So it's very important not to, I know it's kind of crazy to say, but it's important not to try to do it. It's a bit, I've come to this place with music as well now. You know, I used to think I've got to try to do this. I've got to, and you do have to put some energy into it, but I think it is about letting things happen in a lot of circumstances and letting things happen in a way. Manifesting is kind of like, it's, I mean, I do it. I walk and talk, you know, I honestly, I believe just breathing, walking and talking is actually the best. And, you know, people look at you in the park or wherever you are and they're like, that guy's just talking to himself. But I actually think manifesting for me is going on a train of thought or a journey, or it could be a musical thing. It could be drawing a painting or you know, writing a book or whatever your choice of expression is. But it is I like to think of it like a practice as well. It's a practicing of the realization of something. So I was just thinking of the Kaka ceremony, because the Kaka ceremony is all about the practicing of the manifesting of the intention. And essentially your intention is just your thought. And I always love to think of this, like your thoughts, well, be careful of your thoughts, because your thoughts become your words. Be careful of your words because your words become your actions. Be careful of your actions because your actions become your habits. Be careful of your habits because your habits become your character. Be careful of your character because your character becomes your destiny. So from the concept of thoughts, you're suddenly looking at your destiny, and that's such a, I don't know, it's such a powerful way of looking at every thought you have. And and Bitcoin really is the purifier of the thoughts, because you can't really change your thoughts, but you can slowly evolve them over time, and you can slowly purify them over time. And I think you do that just by, firstly, by accepting the whole of yourself and the whole of your situation. And yeah, just being comfortable with yourself. So manifesting is kind of like, and this is why I like the Kaka ceremony as well, because which, by the way, I'm thinking of doing something completely different, because the Kaka ceremony's got this, you know, I mean, the cacao is literally used like a medicine, right? It's, again, it's the medicine for the activation of the intention. And I believe as Bitcoiners, we kind of need a ceremony. I think actually every kind of, I guess you could say, age or generation or group of humans, I mean, if we want to call ourselves Bitcoiners, we can. And I think in a way we're always defining ourselves through these ceremonies. Like, I mean, the halving party, for example, is a ceremony for us now. You know, each block is a ceremony, each meetup, each conference, they're ceremonies now. And so I just have the idea of turning the cacao ceremony into a sacred Satoshi ceremony, because we are all Satoshi and we are all looking for a sense of expression through Satoshi. And in a way, I think we can do that as Bitcoiners. So it's kind of like a sacred meeting where we enter, we experience, we explore the expression of Satoshi, which is essentially just our own expression, you know, as Bitcoiners. So I think it's, So in that sense, manifestation will definitely be a part of these ceremonies, I think.
For those who are not yet familiar with Roger's work around cacao, so Roger presents and hosts these Bitcoin chocolate making workshops, the BitChoc Rocks Bitcoin chocolate making workshop at different Bitcoin conferences around the world and different events, and many Bitcoiners have joined around the world. And it is an immersive experience of the process of making chocolate, alchemy, mythology of both Bitcoin and cacao into, and kind of mix them, have a sense of balance and acceptance and self-love really shine through these ceremonies. I'm yet to participate in one of them. And you've used some big words here on your website from a chocolate making workshop. Elaborate on the links you draw between chocolate making, alchemy, mythology, acceptance, balance, all these good and big words.
Okay. Well, firstly, I believe Bitcoin is like a balancing thing in the universe. It is the unification of these opposites, right? Bitcoin is chaos that meets the order. Bitcoin is the tangible that meets intangible. It's the it's rules without rulers, you know. It's peace and revolution. It's these opposites that somehow come together, but they never actually come together. They're they're the unification of opposites. And cacao is actually a very similar thing. In fact, the ancient Mayans thought of cacao as a balancing force, because essentially cacao is gifted by the ancient gods. And in that gift, a bit like the way Satoshi gifted us Bitcoin, it was an unconditional giving. And it meant that we could now acquire the pristine asset without having to go through an extraction process. So, for example, cacao is not, you don't need to go to war for cacao. You don't need to kill an animal for cacao. You don't need to extract it from the earth. Cacao is just, it drops from a tree, it dries out, and it's this pristine asset. It's the same with Bitcoin and the way Bitcoin enters the world. Bitcoin enters the world through mining, right? And you don't go to war for creating Bitcoin. You don't kill an animal. You don't extract Bitcoin from the earth, right? It's gifted through this process. And so it bypasses the extraction process needed to acquire the asset. So both cacao and Bitcoin are balancing phenomenon. And so I like to think of Satoshi as being a mythological character, and the ancient Mayan gods were seen as mythological characters. And when I say mythology, I just mean, you know, it's a story of that we all sort of hold true. So there's the mythological side of stuff, and then there's the alchemical side of stuff. And, you know, alchemy, again, is a bit like mythology. I think Bitcoiners sort of go, well, man, you don't need to talk about these weird words. Like, what the hell do they have to do with Bitcoin? I mean, mythology, firstly, is a story, but it's the story of all of us have a myth that we're playing out every day. It's the story of our life, right? That's your story. Alchemy is, I believe, a transforming word. It's the ancient word for scientists, and these alchemists were literally transforming base metal into gold. That was a transforming thing for them. And Jung actually highlighted that all of these alchemical images were actually transformational images as well. And essentially, alchemy has a physical kind of transformation from gold into from base metal into gold, and it also has an internal metaphysical transformation of purifying the self. And this was done through these images and these, you know, Jung wrote a book called Memories, Dreams and Reflections, which is all about really, he wrote maybe the transformation of, or the symbols and transformations, I think it was. But anyway, it's all about seeing these symbols and how they actually mean there's a transformation that you're going through at that time. Bitcoin is actually 21st century alchemy, because Bitcoin is gold 2.0. So it's literally the creation of gold in a physical sense, even though, well, we could argue whether Bitcoin's physical or not. But anyway, it let's just call it. It's gold 2.0, and it's also the purification of the self, in that it is the transformation of, you know, the self from one level to another level of understanding the self. So Bitcoin is a mythological thing. Bitcoin is an alchemical thing. I truly believe it's the alchemy of the 21st century. And cacao is exactly this process. You know, the cacao ceremony is all about coming to a sense of comfort, a sense of compassion, a sense of peace within yourself and acceptance of yourself. I like to call it the affirmation of the self, because it's really the recognition of the dark side and the light side and the good and the bad of your situation for where you're at right now. Because it's always going to have, wherever you are in life, you're always going to have a good and a bad side. So if you can't accept it now, you're just never going to accept it. It's just it's a very simple philosophy in a way, but it somehow still eludes many people, because I think they just think of life being a linear thing, and you just, you know, one day you're going to get there, you know. So I think the cacao ceremony and cacao is really it's really a balancing thing for the self. And as Bitcoiners, I just feel like we're really open to it. You know, I've done cacao ceremonies with Bitcoiners who haven't, who were skeptical to begin with. And I really feel that Bitcoin is this beautiful Trojan horse that starts out with everyone thinking it's a tool and it's physical and it's all tangible stuff. But actually, Bitcoin is much more than a tool. And in the hands of humanity, I think Bitcoin becomes magical. It is literally magical internet money. And that's because, yeah, it's because of this purification system of the self. And, yeah, that's why we Bitcoin.
And if we think about manifestation and the process of chocolate making, you're making chocolate from scratch, and this chocolate wouldn't have existed if it wasn't for you making it, right? I guess. So you're partaking that process of helping the chocolate to transform. And if we think about it, like, Bitcoiners are Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
Bitcoin needs Bitcoin. Bitcoin needs Bitcoiners, and Bitcoiners are Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin doesn't need you. Like, you need Bitcoin. You need Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't need you. That's absolutely correct. But on the other side, Bitcoin needs Bitcoiners, and we're Bitcoiners.
Yes.
And
yes,
the collective of Bitcoiners are Bitcoin. And this is why we're all Satoshi. And to think about manifestation, my personal trick, I'm going to share this selflessly with the general public, so that everyone can benefit from this, is that the trick I find about manifestation is you have to approach it from the perspective of abundance. You cannot approach it. If you approach it from a perspective of lacking, then you're not going to get it. So it's about, to make it work, it's not about wanting it enough. It's about considering it done. It's about aligning yourself with that frequency where you're already there. So if you're manifesting for money, you have to live like you have money. If you want to manifest health, you have to live like you have health. If you want to lose weight, you have to match your frequency at a healthy and fit person and live in the way that's how they live. Like, pay attention to what they eat, pay attention to what exercise do they do, and just match your own frequency to that, and do that long enough. And then you will get there. And for me, parallel universes are here. They're here. All of the parallel universes we have easy access to if we want to. We just need to align our own frequency and energy to that, whatever universe you want to live in, and just start now. But you have to make that mental decision, and you have to stick to it. But I like to think that we have access to alternative reality at our fingertip. If I want to do something, I align and I do it, and I believe it's done. It's just a matter of time. I'm on my way there, and I'm going to enjoy the hell of the journey. And that's usually the best. I usually have the best success rates from manifestation adapting this framework.
That's beautiful. I mean, it's so simple. It's so simple. And yet It's like Bitcoin. It's unbelievable. It's so good, and it's too good to be true. And but at the end of the day, everybody is exactly where they should be. Everybody is exactly doing what they want to be doing, and where they are in life is a result of all the decisions they've made so far. And it's this concept of prejudice, privilege. I think this is what really helps me. A lot of people sort of think, oh, if only I had more money, if only I had a wife, if only I had a husband, if only I had this car or this house. And I just think your concept of what you want is completely manufactured by the world around you displaying. Again, this is all about because the world has taught us to have specific values, and we align ourselves with those values rather than looking on the inside and thinking, well, actually, what do I really want? We go with the values that society tells us we should want, which is completely fucking insane. And yet everyone, you know, we're all guilty of it, right? Like, I mean, because it's pervasive. It's like that's what fiat culture has driven into us for freaking who knows how long. So the concept of privilege is really at the root of all this, because it basically tells you that, well, no, you need to have this because without this, you're not going to be happy. And if you're not part, if you don't have this amount of money, and if you don't have this amount of property, and if you don't have this kind of relationship, well, then you're not going to be happy because that's what everyone else has, and they're all happy with what they've got. And yet they don't realize that actually every human being needs happiness. They all cry sometimes. They all get injured. They all need love. They all have bad relationships. They all have all of the things that every human being has. And actually, regardless of your situation, you always go through these ups and downs. It's just that's what life is. It's got nothing to do with actually what you've got. You know, Jeff Bezos goes through these ups and downs just like some poor kid in, you know, Zimbabwe. They have exactly the same experience of going. And so where is this concept of privilege? It's absolutely fabricated fiat bullshit. And I just, when it's so humbling to realize that we all have exactly what we really need right now, right here, right now.
Well, this is how I think about privilege, because like growing up, I was only child, love and support. And I grew up tuning out of reality because I would see, like I would watch TV and I see these like African children and without clean water or electricity. And I felt really guilty. And I thought to myself, like, what's the difference between me and them? Is that I won the genetic lottery and I was born in this family and I have received all these resources, and I could have been them, and this their life doesn't seem to be so comfort, and you know it's limited in many sense, and the sense of guilt would really consume me growing up. So I chose to just not look at it so that I'm sane, so I'm not like permanently depressed. And this was changed because of Bitcoin, because now I feel like I make a difference now. I have a platform where I can help people and I can spread positivity and hopefully help people realize they do have an option. And no matter where you start, no matter where you are, no matter age, gender, race, just whatever man-made labels we get put on by other people in the society, we have a choice to claim our sovereignty and make a difference in the world. And today, how I view privilege is that if you are in a privileged position, use that privilege, because we are, let's face it, we're still in the fiat world and we're trying to onboard as many people as possible onto the Bitcoin standard as fast as possible. And if you're in a fortunate situation where you actually do have those privileges, don't simply discard them, like, and not use them. Use them. Use them to help other people. Use them to spread love and energy and positive vibes and help people get there sooner instead of feeling guilty about it and not use it at all. And I think that's, for me, that has been a more productive way to ease the guilt, just to make something, just to make it productive and use it in a way that helps Bitcoin, helps other people, helps ourselves. Speaking of enjoying life and be yourself and have that sense of reality, you enjoy life cold turkey, meaning no, like I saw you in Berlin and in a world like that, you enjoy life cold turkey with no drinks, no sugar and no substance, whatever. Like, and yet you seem to live life quite intense. I can tell you can be quite intense person too. So like, is there any particular reason why do you choose to not tune into any of these, any particular reason? And how do you even maintain such intensity and passion without external stimulants at all?
Recently, I've seen Ioni speak a few times. Do you know Bitcoin Psychedelic? He talks about psychedelics and Bitcoin quite a lot.
Yeah, he's on my show. We talked about psychedelics at one point.
Oh, cool. Cool. Yeah, I love him. And he made me realize, actually, that Bitcoin is the psychedelic. I do truly recognize and believe what he's saying when he says that. It's about losing yourself in something. I've found the substance that alters my state of mind. It takes me away from my psychedelic experience, actually, because life is kind of psychedelic for me. I'm just beginning to realize this now, that it's crazy enough for me. Life is crazy enough. I don't need to be more out of control. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a weird thing. I guess, I don't know, maybe people have a lot of control in their life. The idea of losing themselves is really appealing. It must be, because I guess that's the whole idea of psychedelics, or the whole idea of alcohol or whatever drug it is just to sort of be out of control. But I feel like I already am out of control. I mean, I like, you know what, like, it's a really interesting thing, because this is why I love Alan Watts so much as well, because just being in a perfect flow state, which we are actually already always in, it's just the realization of that flow state is what eludes us, because we have this fixation on the physical stuff. We have this fixation on, you know, this separation. But actually, we are all in the flow state. We're all part of this universe, which is constantly in motion. It's constantly moving. It's constantly evolving. And that for me is a psychedelic experience. It like, what else? I kind of think that Bitcoin is the fabric of the universe in this way, because if science has told us that everything is pure information, Bitcoin is just pure information. And so really that connection between everything is for me completely flowing all the time, and it's completely psychedelic. I mean, I took mushrooms just recently, not actually that recently, but recently enough. And it was just way too much. It was like a whole, like, my tongue went green and I started seeing leprechauns, and it was what other people would say, man, that's great. Like, that was, you had letting go. You were you were hitting another dimension, right? But I don't know. For me, it was too much somehow. I don't think I've ever needed to let go, but maybe it's because whenever I've let go, I haven't enjoyed it yet.
And there's always an option for you, but you're already in a really, really good state, which brings to my next question that I received from someone we both know. I told him that I'm talking to Roger today, and he sent this question over. I'm not going to dox him, but here's the question. What's up with your smile? You always have this smile on your face, and Yellow was making that argument, that comment on the Why We're Bullish show, and I agreed. And it was after I met you in person and spent a few days during the meetup, I realized that that's your permanent face. Like, that's your permanent face. like looking through the fridge and trying to look for snacks that you know you don't have. And I don't know, like, I don't know what's up. You're always kind of, you know, like some people have resting bitch face, and then their mouth is like pointing downward and they look like unhappy with their face just naturally resting. And you're completely the opposite. You always have a smile on your face, and then you have this sort of a little bit of a confused look, even. Like, we talked about this. You had this a little bit confused look, and there was always a smile on your face. So what's up with that smile? Why you always have that smile? And what is the underlying reason why you are, you know, so blessed when you approach reality and other people?
Okay, well, first of all, whenever I'm around Bitcoiners, that's like I'm just going to be completely, it's an off-the-wall, blissed-out experience. So that's going to be a default sort of expression. I was once told by a teacher that I really loved and respected when I was very, very young. And she said, oh yeah, Roger's great. He's this happy-go-lucky guy. And you know, when somebody, I guess, identifies you as something when you're very small, you sort of go, oh, that's who I am then, you know? Aww. And luckily enough, it's kind of, I've been able to maintain it in a way. But again, it comes back to this idea that I'm completely out of control, you know? And that, I think this is where that confused look comes in, because I know I will never know. I've always known that. I know I'm never going to fucking get there. I'm never going to be something that I truly recognize, or there's always going to be a question of doubt in my mind. But in that not knowing, I know that it's always going to be a confusing, weird and wonderful experience. But that's the beauty of the mystery of life. That's like, if we ever know it, if we ever knew what was coming next, like, it'd just be so boring. It would just be so just unremarkable, I guess. But I feel very boring. And the irony of it is that people say, people say it's an exciting thing, I guess, to be around me, but I actually feel like I should always be doing something more exciting, which is a kind of weird thing as well. But, you know, like, I do feel like people, as I've seen dudes who are always smiling, and I've always thought, how do they do that? And it dawned on me the other day, actually, that it is all about just accepting every situation that comes to you with exactly the way it is, and just saying, well, okay, my car just exploded. Well, okay, I just got banned from the United States for 5 years. Oh, okay. I just, which I did, you know, I lost all my Bitcoin, right? These things have happened to me. And what are you going to do about it? You're just going to go, well, okay, like, what are my options here? You just keep rolling with it, really.
Exact indication of why you're wise in that sense is that to have that awareness of I don't know everything is not enough to have that bliss state. You have to, because if we think about how we all have ego and then we want to know shit, like we want to know things and then we want to be something in this world, right? And that's just natural. And then you have to have enough strengths and awareness to bypass that egotistic aspect of wanting to know and needing to know and wanting to look bigger than you actually are, and just accept that it's okay to not know and it's okay to lose whatever. And I'm similar in that sense. Like I was saying to my mom the other day, because she was saying how, oh, like you're traveling so much and like what's up and what are you doing with your life? And I was telling her how my heart is my home, how I don't need a place where I call home, because my heart is my home and I carry my home around. And whenever I'm with myself, I'm perfectly fine because I'm already at ease. And they are, you know, always worried, are you lonely? Like, do you have friends? And but at the same time, they're worried about your safety. Like, if you're going out, like you're meeting all these strangers, like who are they? And are they men or are they girls? And so they're conflicting themselves, right? But I'm like, don't worry about it. Like, I enjoy being alone and I need a lot of time to be by myself. And this is who I am, because even if I'm by myself, I'm never alone because my head, it's loud. Like there's always something undergoing. There's so much things to do. There's so many things to reflect on. And my heart is my home. So don't worry about me not having a home. And I think
that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
You have that awareness of I don't need to know. I don't know everything. And that even that alone, most people don't have. And then on top of that, you need to drop the ego and say, I need to know everything and just be perfectly fine with it. And you're in the flow state of whatever happens, happens. And I'm just going to take the situation as is and think about what I'm going to do going forward to be free, to be happy, to be loved and connected. And that's a great life philosophy, I think, to adapt. And it's a great way to reduce self-induced pain, which is really what most of our pain are coming from, in my opinion, to be honest. And I try to do the same thing, for sure. And during your conversation with Knud on Freedom Footprint, which I enjoyed a lot, and I recommend everybody check it out, you quoted Joseph Campbell, "The image of God is the final obstruct." I agree. It's such a great quote. So the question here is, what is your relationship with God these days? How has it progressed over
time? As a kid, we were never exposed to any kind of religion or any kind of belief structure. Both my parents are actually pretty atheistic in their approaches. My mum always had a sense of superstition. And so for me, because I'm so close to both my parents, but particularly to my mum, I always wondered what that was about. And it's so interesting, actually, you should say your heart is your home, because that's such a grounding thing. And I think, in a way, my mum used to say, because when her mother passed away, she would often say, she's always in my heart. She's always there, you know. And it made me think, wow, like, what's that all about, you know? How could somebody be there and not be there? And I think my understanding of the metaphysical and the concept of God and all of these things that we consider the unknown, you know, whether it's the end of the universe or the center of the mind or whatever these concepts are, they are they're concepts. They're creations of the imagination, and that's where they belong. And in a way, this is why I think when you get these spiritual sort of gurus who try to bring the metaphysical into this real world of substance, there's this kind of conflict there, and I think the idea of God for me is very much a metaphysical thing, but it is present in everything. So that divine mystery, or whatever you want to call it, is something that it can't actually be brought into this physical world, because it's part of this alternative, like you say, parallel world. Oh, actually, no, I shouldn't say parallel world, because a parallel world probably is a physical world, but in a way, the metaphysical world, it never actually becomes physical. So trying to bring that into the physical world is always going to end up with some kind of weird looking woo-woo thing, right? But the idea of God is, I think there are people who don't have a concept of that metaphysical side of things. And I used to be someone like that, but I'm fully aware of, I'm fully aware that I know what God is, but I'll never actually know what God is. Like, I know that I will never know, basically.
Having a strong faith in that sense and understanding that you will never know, but you can get closer to it and tap into that energy can really help us individually to bring more peace and love and connection into this world, for sure.
There's a lot of Bitcoiners that don't talk about love, for example. They don't recognize that Bitcoin is love. They much rather talk about how, you know, Bitcoin is money and money is what's going to save us, you know, and that, you know, you could argue for, yeah, different, you could argue many different sides to that. But in a way, there's a reason why Michael Saylor is so exalted in Bitcoin. And, you know, like, I'm not saying, like, I love what Michael Saylor does, but Michael Saylor is very specific in not talking about metaphysical things. I don't know if you've noticed that, but he's great, and I love listening to him. But for somebody who thinks so much and who talks so much, to not come to maybe he has come to the realization about Bitcoin and love, by the way, but he chooses not to talk about it. But what is interesting is that other Bitcoiners really respect Michael for what he does talk about, and he doesn't talk about love. And for me, my hope anyway, one day, is that there's somebody just as famous, and not just as famous, but just as well respected as Michael Saylor at these big conferences who is talking about love. Because at the end of the day, I think that's the balance that Bitcoin is actually trying to bring.
Question request received. And if one day Saylor comes on my show, we're going to talk about love. And having said that, it's fine. Like, it's everybody has their their jam for content, right? Yeah. And I cannot talk about technical aspect of Bitcoin whatsoever. And I talk about culture and I talk about love and I talk about connections and freedom and all that human stuff. So it's in a way, I'm grateful for him not talking about this so I can talk about it. So and I can be that person and bring the feminine energy that you talked about. Hopefully bring more balance into the Bitcoin ecosystem.
We need a Bitcoin conference that's dedicated to culture, is dedicated to philosophy, dedicated to the arts, dedicated to the human side of Bitcoin.
The narrative right now is starting to shift from purely economical, purely technological to something that's more cultural. We see this in Berlin, which, by the way, if you haven't heard, there was this great meetup that happened. It was the first year and the vibe was so pure and great, and combined with what Berlin has to offer, I guess I can speak on behalf of you as well. Everybody there had a great time, and next year it will also happen. So if you are curious about what it can look like, what a community-based effort, a group of Bitcoiners get together, have a blast, can look like, join us next year. I hope to still be able to make it next year, but and I would for sure try, because it was a lot of fun and a lot of great energy floating around. And I almost feel like I meet lifelong friends every year in Bitcoin, which is insane. And I was just thinking about this yesterday, how I meet lifelong connections through Bitcoin every single year and every time I travel. And I'm so, so grateful for it. And if you haven't had the chance to meet, have your own community with Bitcoiners, try to find it either through your local Bitcoin meetups or to make the effort and travel to at least one of these Bitcoin conferences. There's some sort of magic that happens when Bitcoiners get together and socialize. And there's so much joy and connection that happens so naturally. And I hope the Live with Bitcoin show, because we tap into more of a personal aspect, we give a similar feel, or at least give a taste of it, what it's like to have a conversation with other Bitcoiners with Bitcoin as the context and not a subject, which is the difference between this podcast with many other Bitcoin podcasts out there. And I hope sooner rather than later, people realize that and pay more attention to the human side and the cultural side of it. You're exploring this idea of the sacred Satoshi ceremony. And what do you hope, how far are you along in the process? Like, what do you hope participants will take away from this ceremony?
So I've had a number of different Kakao ceremonies. And I feel it's crazy. Bitcoin is so primed for the exploration of a ceremony like that, because we are all literally on the same wavelength. Like, we are the very embodiment of a hive mind, because we all think and have so perfectly aligned values through Bitcoin that we don't need to get into a comfort zone when we come together, because we already have the understanding of what we're trying to do here. So in a way, like, the Sacred Satoshi ceremony is already it is already happening through, as you're saying, through a conference, through a meetup. There is already a sense of magic there. But I feel like if we somehow define it a little more and make it, give it a name and give it a time and a place and say, okay, this is going to be a Sacred Satoshi ceremony. If you want to come and, you know, a bit like how Berlin, like, come as you are, be completely open to seeing how you feel in certain situations. And I think the idea of expressing yourself in a sacred place that you feel comfortable, but expressing yourself in a way that is not only new to other people, but kind of a bit new to yourself as well, because it is an exploration of the self. It is an exploration of the darkness of yourself, of all the things that you need to express at that time. That's why it is literally Satoshi expressing Satoshi. And I feel like, I just feel like this is a just another kind of platform in a way for being human in a way that you wouldn't usually be in any other kind of context. And like you say, as we come together as Bitcoiners, this is a magical thing. And I just want to, I want to just highlight that somehow and make it a ceremony.
Keep me posted on when and where this is happening. Would love to join one of these ceremonies in person and experience 3D Roger and the ceremony again. How can our audience stay close to your work?
Roger9000.com is my website. That has all the links there. I'm starting to use Nostr more and more now. So just Roger9000 on Nostr. Roger9000@getalbi.com. I have Mutiny Wallet set up, which is really cool. You can literally just zap each other with, like, as in any contact you have there is, it's like insane. Like to have a Lightning custodial wallet that you have all your contacts on. It's just the coolest thing. So you can add me there. Again, it's just Roger9000@getalbi.com. Twitter, Roger_9000 is my handle on Twitter. I'm currently making some Bitcoin chocolates that I'm going to be selling at conferences. I've met up with, you remember Monkey from Berlin? Monkey and Anon 2140, we're setting up a bit of a collective, which I think you've been on the chat,
yeah, haven't
you?
Yeah, that's right.
So we're thinking of doing Berlin 2025, and we are going to have a pile of London gigs as well. So October this year, we're thinking of doing Halloween. So I actually think Halloween should be one of the most celebrated times in Bitcoin for many reasons. I don't think it was a coincidence that Bitcoin white paper was released on Halloween. I think it's all...
It's never a coincidence, Roger. It's never a coincidence.
So true. So true.
This has been a real blast, and I'm so glad we get this opportunity to chat. And it's... I really admire how you approach life and the state you're in. And you seem like you're in a good place in life where you like yourself and you're at peace with yourself and the world. And even though the world is burning down to the ground in a way, and we're the type of people that are slow dancing in this burning room, right? And this is what I enjoy a lot as well. And there's certain poetic and romantic approach to life when you are slow dancing in the burning room, the concept itself, right? So I think I'm having a lot of fun, and I think you are too, and so glad to have this opportunity to chat. Thanks for taking the time and joining the show. Any final thoughts you want to share before we wrap up?
Just it's been exceptional to spend time with you too. I am really, really impressed with all your work, your music as well, which is really awesome. I can't wait for the world to hear that. And you know, this podcast is going to explode. It should already be exploding. And I'm very grateful. I think we need to, do as many events and get as many humanizing Bitcoin events happening as possible in the next in the future. And I think we're going to do it. So I'm really excited.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much, Roger, for taking the time. And this is Live with Bitcoin. My name is Vivian. I'm your host. And we'll see you in the next episode.